Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. We're back in our series of profitable niches in real estate, different ways that you can invest in real estate. We've got a good one today. Have you ever considered real estate development? And can the little guy get involved? We'll find out today, and we've got a great guest on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Did you know that industrial real estate is one of the most desired and highest return asset classes in the U.S. today? E-commerce warehousing, distribution, server centers, construction, and automated manufacturing are just a few of the businesses increasing the demands for industrial properties. And you can invest in commercial properties for as little as $50,000 by utilizing experienced syndicators with the track record and experience to locate, negotiate, vet, and manage the best products in the best markets. Wilson Investment Properties is a national syndicator headquartered in Silicon Valley with a long, successful track record of investment real estate and commercial syndications. The Cincinnati Industrial Portfolio is an offering with 17% projected average annual returns and available while shares last. Email commercial@realestateguysradio.com for more information and private placement memorandum on this investment and for your free white paper on commercial real estate. Again, email commercial@realestateguysradio.com.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, we took a week off last week from Profitable Niches, and we had a huge mailbag. We had to get through Ask the Guys. We're going to do another Ask the Guys show because we didn't get to all the questions. So if you've got a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. But we've had this series for quite a few weeks now on different profitable niches, and there's so many more we could do. But today, we're going to talk about a really interesting niche when it comes to real estate investing, and that is starting at the very beginning, real estate development.
Yeah, and I think it's really an interesting topic because it kind of dovetails into understanding where we're at in cycles. You know, in 2008, we had the big downturn and prices kind of went down in a lot of places. And, you know, it was fun to go out because you could buy properties, existing properties, below replacement cost.
Right.
Well, what was fun for investors at that time was horrible for developers because you couldn't build anything because you were competing against properties that were already existing for below replacement cost. Well, times have changed. And so in certain markets, especially markets that really were strong and came back quickly, what ended up happening is the prices got driven up to the point where now development is really viable. And that's at the bigger level. And it's, you know, the little infill projects as well. So the key is, you know, when you're sitting here looking at how are you, am I going to make money in real estate? You know, we always talk about buy and hold and production of income. But to get in the game, you got to force some equity. You know, the quintessential fixer-upper, I'm going to buy an old dilapidated property, I'm going to fix it up, I'm going to force the equity, then I'm going to either flip it or refinance it and bring my equity back out and then roll it forward into a new deal. And so that all works. Well, development is just another way to force equity.
Absolutely. And maybe one of the best ways. The challenge with development is it may seem like a lot. It may seem like this unbelievable amount of things you have to learn. And that can be true. But before we're done today, we're going to break it down in a way that I think you'll see there's opportunity for everybody who's interested. But basically, a developer takes some risks for some reward, like anybody else. If I buy a fat cow, an existing rental home with a tenant in it, and it's just spitting off income, and I can make a nice, you know, 5 or 6 or 7% return, I'm good. That's a part-time kind of investment, and I just own that in my portfolio. If I'm willing to build that house, there's more margin in it. There's profit in it. I can build exactly what a tenant needs. I can take my expertise by noticing and learning a neighborhood and dealing with local property managers and figure out how to create right in the sweet spot of what is needed in the marketplace. So there are some advantages. You know, it's interesting when you talk about risk. Remember, we did one of our earliest mentoring clubs back when we were mentoring investors on long-term buy and hold and short-term separately, and then we kind of folded it all together. But we would ask people, which is more risky, buying an existing building and renovating it or building something from the ground up? And there's not one answer for that.
Right.
A lot of the folks said, well, yeah, but you know, definitely more risky to build it from the ground up. I mean, everything, you have to do everything. Whereas if you buy it existing, most of the work's been done. Then we had a guy go, I don't think that's true. I think when you buy an existing property, you're inheriting whatever that person or people did, and you can't see it all and you can't know it all. When you develop from the ground up, you control every aspect of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you buy an old property and you need to tear it down, that's work that somebody has to pay for. And then you got to build it back up again. And that's work. If you buy something where nothing exists, you just build it up. You don't have to tear it down. I think the issue is one is absorption. You know, in other words, if I build this, is somebody going to buy it? When you build a property, say on spec, which means I'm speculating, I'm betting on somebody in the marketplace wanting to buy the property, there's some risk there. You may end up building too much or build something the market doesn't want. If you build something to order, you know, if you've already got a buyer, that's safer. Build a suit, if you will. You can do that. But, you know, you look at right now what's going on, especially in residential housing, you have people complaining, there's not enough inventory. There's not enough inventory. Talk to our turnkey providers. You know, what's going on? Well, we got more demand for property than there are properties available. You hear Lawrence Yoon from the National Association of Realtors constantly talking about what's driving up home prices is the lack of inventory. It depends on the specific market. And so every market's going to be a little bit different. But if you can put yourself in a market where there's robust demand and there isn't enough supply, and you do a project that is digestible, you're not doing this massive, you know, I'm going to do 1,000 homes. But if you do something that's digestible, you could make the argument that there is a lot less risk in doing a deal like that. You have a fair assurance that your property is going to get absorbed into the marketplace pretty easily. And to your point, you're not dealing with pre-existing problems. You're dealing with kind of a virgin slate, and you get to build it exactly to what you think the market wants right now, not adapt something that was built 30 years ago and see if the market still wants it today.
So let's talk about kind of the timeline of real estate development. And what I mean by that is there's a life cycle of a property from the time that it's just raw land until ultimately it's built, it's finished, people are living in that, whether that's owners or tenants. And during every stage of the life cycle, there's value being added. And developers don't have to take it from dirt to finished occupied property. There's a lot of different spaces in there. So let's just so you get your mind around this. You take something that's just raw land. You buy a piece of raw land and you turn it into an entitled or finished lot. Now, that's a lot happens in that period of time. I mean, just raw land, you may have to change the zoning. You may have to get your subdivision done and figure out where the boundaries are and what the permitted uses are. Then you have to get what we call entitlements, which is basically permission to do certain things. And different land has different uses. And depending on the jurisdiction, you may be limited by that, or there may be a ability to change that. And then you get to the point where you've got to bring in streets and curbs and gutters and utilities, you've got power and electric and plumbing or septic, whatever it is, and now you've got a finished lot. A lot of folks can't really tell the difference between raw land and a finished lot because it doesn't look that different. But you've just added a ton of value. A lot of developers only are land developers.
Right.
They buy big tracts of land, they cut the pizza up, they put all the utilities in, and they sell to folks who just want to buy a lot or two or 10 and build, right? Then in every other stage, you might decide you're going to come in and you're going to buy that finished lot. I don't want to deal with all that stuff. I don't want to go down to the city. I just want to have a lot that has utilities. Now I'm going to hire a contractor, a designer, an architect. I'm going to think about what type of property I want built. I'm going to have it bid and go through that process, right? And then ultimately, there's the development or redevelopment when something needs a facelift. It could be as simple as the rehab you talked about, all the way to tearing it down to the bare bones or even scraping it and starting over. So there's lots of different ways to get in the development business. And you don't have to be a quote-unquote real estate developer to think about real estate development as a niche.
Yeah. And I think coming back to that point, Robert, which is a good one, is that a lot of this is really not being an expert in any one thing except organizing the experts and being a project manager and just understanding the scope of it. And the other part of it is just putting the financing together, whatever that looks like. Sometimes people think, hey, I can't get financing unless the property is already built. That's not true. Every phase of what you're doing can be financed. And there are specialty lenders who have a desire to facilitate this, especially if you're building something that the government wants to see built because they make certain forms of financing available to support that activity. So I was just looking at a senior loan officers lending survey that the Fed did. And one of the areas where they're easing guidelines is in land development, raw land and land development. Why? Because they know they need more inventory. And in order to get that, they have to prepare the land for those very investors you were talking about, the people that are on the front end that only want to do that part of the work. So you can get a feel for where the opportunity is or where the demand is or where the risk is simply by looking at the way the lending community is reacting to the different segments or the life cycle of a property. And so when you see that, you're like, okay, it seems like more money is going to be coming available in this area. And I think right now we're seeing more money coming available to do development.
We'd call that a clue. So the basic concept of development is a change of use, and probably there's construction involved. It can be simple, it can be complicated, it can be small, it can be huge. When we come back, you're going to meet our guest today who has gone through lots of different areas of development. He's got a great story. We'll welcome back to the program Jay Hartley when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating for the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, Robert Kiyosaki. Listen to the Real Estate Guys. They're wild and crazy, but they really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. No matter how you listen, whether it's on the radio or the podcast or while you're exercising, we love that. Take us to the gym. We could use the workout. We're talking today about profitable niches, been doing this for several weeks, and the niche today we're talking about is real estate development, and we've got a guest who's done some of this, and he's got a great story about it. Please welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, Jay Hartley. How are you?
Hey, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you on the program, and most folks who've listened for a while, if they know your name, they know that you are a property manager by heart and training and nature, and that's really how you got your start in real estate, and we've known each other a long time. You've got great experience in property management. And when we're going to be in the area, we thought, well, let's get an update from Jay about property management, except you've kind of changed the focus in what you're doing. You still have a property management background and still do a lot of that. But I thought it would be interesting to hear your story, because rather than bring some huge, big developer on, and we could have done that, a lot of great developers in our world, I thought, let's talk to Jay, because you've gone through this process of becoming a developer and doing smaller projects and so forth. So take us through, if you will, Jay, kind of your mindset and when it occurred to you that, you know, maybe instead of just find existing inventory, I could build some houses.
Sure. Well, it's been an exciting process, but it's also been a painful one in a sense, and some pitfalls and some exciting moments. So yeah, originally we started running out of inventory, so we had to figure out what to do. The initial process for acquiring property management units was either do it for someone else. So if they owned a piece of property, whether they lived in it or they bought it as a rental, then that was one source of our business. The other was properties that we would acquire. So we would buy fixer-uppers, if you will. And that was a nice piece of business, but unfortunately, we ran out of inventory. Prices started to escalate tremendously, and the returns were just diminishing. So we had to look at the marketplace and see where the opportunity would be to add additional inventory. So touring some of the lots after the crash, you could see subdivisions that were partially built out, vacant lots ready to be built on, but you know, no builders in sight. So we started looking at acquiring vacant lots that were already in subdivisions and doing what they call infill. So we'd buy a lot or two, build a home specifically suited to rental property, and then either keep it in our inventory or sell it to our investors. So the turnkey model kind of came out of that. And then from there, it kind of seems competition saw what we were doing and jumped on the bandwagon. I don't want to say it was my idea first, but needless to say, the competition kind of came in and started doing the same thing. So we started to look for other opportunities. So then we got into bigger pieces of development, buying subdivided tracts of land, and then kind of just building from there. So it took off.
Excellent. Well, now let's back up to kind of the first part of this, which is you recognized a need and thought, hey, if we could build some houses, those would be awesome for our clients who are the property management clients. You had certainly some knowledge of construction and part of your property management business, very hands-on in terms of being able to do repairs and so forth. But what was it like to face the task of building a house, and how did you navigate that?
Well, luckily I had some clients that were in the building business. They were actual builders. And so took a couple of those guys to lunch, started really kind of picking their brain. And so we had to kind of navigate the ideas of either hiring somebody to build it for us or building it ourselves. And ultimately, it was a smart decision to partner with a couple of builders in the very beginning. We had them build the product that we wanted. So we, you know, met with the architect, put everything down, decided finish out, and then basically paid the builder at cost or a little bit of profit. You know, they got to make money too. So, sure. But we hired the builders to build it for us. And then that's developed into two prongs where we still use that model. And then we also have some staff that are former builders themselves that work for us on specific projects.
Okay, so this is one of the paradigms I think we want to make sure that people understand, is that you don't have to be the guy swinging the hammer. You can hire someone. Think of a developer as kind of the executive producer of a movie or the orchestra conductor. You know, you're not playing every instrument. You're just putting the pieces together. So finding someone who's already in the building trades, understands that part of it. You find the right property, the right market, the right size. One of the things, the perspectives that you had in property management, of course, is you knew what tenants wanted. And that is helpful when you're trying to figure out, what do I go build?
It is. And that was a great way to put it. You want to target your market. So, you know, on one hand, you want to be able to sell the property to the end user, but you also want to be able to show good profitability. So the best way to do that is to construct the home in such a way that it's beneficial to the tenants, something they want, but also beneficial to the owners. You know, deciding what type of flooring to put in. We all know carpet is probably the cheapest, but carpet wears out the quickest.
Yep.
So if you're putting carpet throughout a house, yes, it's going to be low upfront cost, but if you're holding it for 5 years, you're going to replace that carpet two, maybe three times or more. So you really have to kind of look at long term and what would be best for your clients and longevity.
And I think outcome also is a big part of it, right? As investors were thinking about, in your case specifically, you were building inventory for investors to own that would be tenant occupied. But it may be that where there's opportunity in your market, and I know you've done some of this as well, is to build houses that are going to be sold to people that live in them. That's a different value proposition. Now, there are different types of things that you're going to put in the home to attract the buyers, potential upgrades that you might do, those kinds of things. If you're building something other than single family, whether it's commercial or it's retail or it's multifamily, now the same process of figuring out where is the demand and starting with the demand. And I think if you are in a market long enough, you figure that out. You are in Dallas, Fort Worth, and you have been your entire life and career, so you know that market really well. And we know, having watched that market for a long time, that there was a time when you could buy property here that made a ton of sense in terms of just buy and hold rentals, and then inventory got tight. So you recognized that need and thought, wow, we could go out and create this inventory. And not only could you find a great ongoing book of business for your property management business, but you can figure out how to create a margin in the development. So talk about that part. If I'm hiring someone third party, I'm hiring a builder, I'm hiring an architect, how can I make any money?
You know, economies of scale is the biggest thing. So the opportunity to go in and acquire property, you know, if you're buying one or two homes, there's margin to be made, but it's not a ton.
Yeah.
But not necessarily every investor is going to go out and buy 20 homes. So what we like to do is syndicate as many times as we can, or allow the opportunity for bulk buys, if you will. So we, you know, right now we're working on a project where we bought a subdivision. It had 200 home sites on it. There was 12 existing homes, and so we get to build the rest. But, you know, it wouldn't be wise for us to go in and build, you know, 180 rentals. It's right. going to flood the market. The absorption rate is going to, you know, be slow to fill up the properties. So we're building twofold, one for investors as either build jobs or turnkey properties, or we're building for owner-occupied. So very similar looking products, just, you know, a few tweaks here and there to adjust one way or the other. So, but it allows the opportunity for everyone to make a little bit, because our end user is either going to be an owner-occupant or a investor, but we were able to buy it at a bulk price, build them at a bulk price, and so everybody makes a little bit of money.
Well, this makes sense because a builder, a home builder who's getting hired to build a house, has a cost of acquisition of the client and their advertising, or they're working their referral network or whatever they're doing. If you come in and say, hey, we'll have you build 10 houses, then instantly they have durability of work. They know that it's coming. They know they've got this gig. And so they're going to sharpen their pencil a little bit, give you a better deal. I'd probably rather in any business have one guy that buys 100 instead of 100 guys that buy one. I mean, I don't want all my eggs in one basket, but it to be able to know that they've got work coming is good for them, good for you, and lets you preserve some margin for the buyer as well.
It is, and it keeps your labor costs down. One of the biggest issues we're dealing with right now is keeping labor or having labor ready and available. Right. We're losing guys left and right to other projects. So if we don't keep them busy, we lose that framer. We lose that concrete guy. We lose the roofer. So we try to set them up to where they're going from one job site to the next over and over again. So I keep those guys busy and I keep them on my job. If I lose them and then have another project coming up 30 days later, I go to get the same guys and they're already on someone else's job because they have to eat. So then I have to go out and find a new source of labor. Yeah. So that's a tough piece as well.
Good point. So walk us through, you know, we've got folks listening and maybe they've considered development, but they thought, well, you know, that's so much more. Walk us through the learning curve. You talked about, you know, some pitfalls and some things you're excited about. What are the things you wish you knew before you got started in the development business?
Well, labor was probably one of the biggest ones, and keeping ready sources of labor available. You know, ironically, money was probably the easiest thing to come by. So the other biggest pitfall was opportunity and opportunity costs, out hunting for the next deal to try and make sure that we had projects to continue to go to next, versus doing a project, getting almost finished, and then hunting for the next opportunity. You had so much downtime that you lost in between because of delay in opportunity. Yeah. So that was one of the biggest issues that we ran into. Selling the homes was the easy part. Building the homes was the easy part once we did it up to scale. Building ones and twos, that really presented some major problems. So economies of scale.
So you do need to get to some scale for it to make sense. Hard to make a lot of margin if you're just the guy buying a single family lot and building a house that you're hiring a builder to build. There's not a whole lot there. But if you can get a little more size and scope, but it doesn't have to be huge. I mean, talk about some of the first projects that you did in terms of the size and kind of the cost, because you had to raise some money to go do these projects. Talk about kind of what the scope was of those.
Sure. Originally, when we first started construction, we were doing the infill model. So we'd find subdivisions that either had, you know, a few lots up to, you know, 20 lots that were available, and we'd take down some of those lots and then start the construction. So we were doing ones and twos. Originally, the pitfall was that we did the ones and twos and then went to the three and four. And that kind of, you know, left us hanging and really taught us a strong lesson on the labor burden. So we wanted to make sure that we had the economy of scale. So we started looking for more projects to move the guys to from one to the next. So we'd take down larger amounts of lots, even though I didn't necessarily want to build them all at the same time. We'd build two or three homes at a time, and then we staggered them. So one would start, you got ground up construction, so you're doing slab or foundation, then you're going to wood wall or wood frame walls and so forth. So each one of those is a different contractor. You put them on one project and then you move them to the next one. You keep them busy. The original plan to build single-family homes was easy to come up with the money. Most of the banks were willing to loan money on construction, so that was easy. When you start doing two, three, four at a time, it got a little more difficult. They wanted to make sure that you had buyers. They wanted to make sure you were completing all your projects and you didn't run into issues with being overextended. So then we really started looking at other opportunities to syndicate, bring in investors that would upfront be kind of the equity piece to make sure we had enough funds to be able to build the homes over and over again. There was also leverage that was still included in on that. And then a lot of the investors ended up buying the properties that they invested in originally. Once it was finished construction, we put a tenant in it. They quite often would be the buyer that ended up with the property. So,
well, that's a great way to go if you have the person that wants to end up owning a rental property and you say, well, hey, rather than you wait for me to go get it built with outside financing and charge you a higher rate, what if you put the very money in that got the project built? So that makes a ton of sense. We're talking with Jay Hartley today about real estate development. Is it right for you? What are the different ways you get involved? We'll continue that discussion when we come back. Plus, we'll play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Stop for a moment. Why are you listening to this show? Are you dreaming of a bigger, brighter financial future? More personal freedom to live life on your own terms? What if there was just one skill that could make it happen? There is. Sales. Robert Kiyosaki says every entrepreneur must be good at sales. It's true for investors too. Sales is how you attract money, people, and opportunities. Sales is the skill used to negotiate deals and lead your team. Sales skills are essential to success. The good news is, it's a learnable skill. The great news is, we've created a two-day interactive workshop to teach those skills to you. Make plans today to attend How to Win Funds and Influence People, Mastering the Art of Financial Selling. For dates and details, send an email to sales@realestateguysradio.com or visit realestateguysradio.com and look under events. Gain the skills you need to succeed. Email sales@realestateguysradio.com or look under the events tab at realestateguysradio.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years could be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. For more information, qualified accredited investors should email coconuts@realestateguysradio.com. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. Email coconuts@realestateguysradio.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. For more information, email coconuts@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into this show. Hey, right around the corner, it's our annual sales event. We're not selling anything. We're teaching folks how to sit across the table and sell their services, their syndications, real estate, whatever that looks like for you. It's called How to Win Funds and Influence People. At the end of the day, we all have to persuade and convince, and this is an awesome workshop that Russell Gray does just once a year. You'll get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We're talking about a profitable niche, and that is development. Before we get back to our interview with Jay Hartley, it's time to play Real Estate Trivia, your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question. As soon as you hear the question and think you know the answer, you're going to fire off your best guess to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. That's trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of a great book called The One Thing That Changed Everything. Lots of great authors in this book, and you're going to love it. Great stories, inspiration. Always great to get around folks that are doing the thing. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on the show, it was Ask the Guys, and we asked this. The U.S. is the country with the most pet dogs at nearly 70 million. Yeah, there are more dogs as pets in the U.S. than anywhere else. Here's what we asked. Which country is number two? Well, the answer is Brazil, with over 35 million pet dogs. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Which U.S. state is the most tenant-friendly? Jay's background, of course, in property management. Lots of folks who listen to the show own rental property. We like to look for markets like the one we're recording in today, Texas, that are very landlord-friendly. But which U.S. state is the most tenant-friendly? And the answer may surprise you. If you know or want to guess, just send us your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, your guess, and your mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of The One Thing That Changed Everything. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking with Jay Hartley about a profitable niche you might consider. That's real estate development. He was a guy who owned a lot of single-family houses and managed properties for folks, and got into the development business kind of because he had this demand. And Jay, you've now done quite a few substantial projects. Let's talk about where you take your business to the next level. So now you have crews and employees and that part, and talk about that transition.
That was an interesting growth spurt for me, and it took some gut-wrenching mentoring sessions, if you will, to kind of get my head wrapped around building it, because yeah. I've always been known as the property management guy. I still do property management, and it's one of my great loves. You know, I own quite a bit of real estate, and I consider myself a buy and hold, but I'm not afraid to sell them anymore. You know, that was the... I want to say I was probably a collector before.
Yeah.
So I collect real estate, and it was tough for me to wrap my head around selling them. But yeah. Now I buy and sell them. But expanding the business, taking the risk, you know, that's gut-wrenching sometimes. Spending, you know, writing the check, spending the money really takes a good comfort level. So the first couple of times I had to write checks was scary. So, but I had some help, and I had some guidance. So that was great for me.
Yeah, and it is doable at the end of the day. A lot of the folks that listen to our program and other shows, they focus on buy and hold, and they're passive investors. They're maybe, you know, doing something else to live, thrive, and survive, but they build up a portfolio of real estate, which is awesome. Nothing wrong with that. Many of the niches we've talked about in the last few weeks are the things you can do. You know, you can buy a property and just hang on to it. But development is where, you know, we talked about forcing equity, the idea that you add value that creates a bigger pie than was there before. And that's what you can do with development. And of course, there are folks who develop by contract. They put together a project where somebody else owns the land, somebody else brings in the money, and they just, you know, do the whole project. And then there's folks that are doing it in their own account. And you've kind of done both. You've developed some property that you've sold off, and you've found this model works great for creating inventory for investors. But also, because of the market you're in, you built some higher end stuff too. Talk about that, about transitioning based on where the market's gone.
Sure. You want to explore other opportunities. So, you know, taking partnering with people, if you will, whether it be partnering with somebody that owns the land that you can develop and build on, or partnering with a builder that brings a special skill set to the job. It's not necessarily paying somebody to do it or buying the land to develop. It's finding the partners that are a good fit for each individual project. So the opportunity presented itself. Somebody brought an opportunity to us to build higher end homes. Well, we were already building, you know, 1,500 to 2,500 square foot homes. Sure, why can't we just go ahead and build a 5,000 plus square foot home? Sure, it's just construction, right? Higher end finish out. And so that was an opportunity that kind of came at us, and we explored it.
Again, that would help your crews stay busy and all those things you talked about?
It would. And the opportunity to do it was twofold. One, somebody had parcels of land that we could build on. And there was a need for higher end homes that could keep our crews busy. And it looked like it would be quite profitable. So we tackled the project of building higher end homes. We built six, and four of them were great. Two of them kind of didn't necessarily go exactly the way we wanted to. We ran into some labor problems. We ran into some zoning for flood encumbrances. And that's a whole interesting topic that I'd prefer to stay away from. You know, I don't want to ever have to experience that again. All in all, those were all syndicated opportunities that everybody got their money back plus some return. So it was great for our investors. It wasn't as great for us as we had hoped it would be, but it was definitely a learning experience. Would I do it again? I don't know. I mean, I've been asked that a couple of times, and, you know, if the right opportunity came along, I would certainly look at it. So yeah. You got to be open to different opportunities and see what works. You know, you can stay in your specific niche and truck along, but, you know, the market's going to change at some point. It does. If you watch history, if you listen to Russ and Robert, you know, if you listen to you guys, it, you know, the market's changed. So we have different cycles. And if you're prepared for a market change, then opportunity is going to present itself. And if you take advantage of it, then it might be great. Some people like to just kind of stick with it.
Well, you know, there's not a right or wrong when it comes to that. You can get rich in a niche. We've talked about all these different niches, and some people go, yeah, mobile home parks, that's for me. I just want to be the mobile home park guy or gal. And some people go, well, no, I'm all about assisted living. And that's great. I think the cycle part's important because different types of real estate investments fall in and out of favor. The ability to get, you know, we've talked on this show recently about just the continued cap rate compression of apartments. It's harder and harder to find well-performing apartment buildings because the demand is so high that people are chasing the yields. They'll pay more for the building, which makes the returns less. And it's gotten to the point where it's scared some people away. Other people are lowering their guidelines or going a little further out or taking on riskier projects. And that's a clue. But I think what one of the great lessons watching you, Jay, is you're building your experience resume. So when we first met, property management and buy and hold were your things. You owned property and we had a great property management business, hundreds and hundreds of houses. And we had lots of listeners avail themselves of your service and everybody raved about it. And to reinvent yourself when the market changed takes a lot. And I think where we are right now is people are looking at it going, well, maybe what I'm doing is working. But what you really did is you completely changed. And while you still do the property management, you still have buy and hold, you've become a bigger person as an investor by trying these new things.
Well, I thought we were going to talk about my weight, but just kidding. The experiences are incredible. The opportunity to try different experiences has been fantastic. So there's many facets of the real estate world that I can say that I've tried. There's quite a few that I've been successful at. And so if I needed to at any point in time, whether there's an aspect of it that may not show great promise right now, it may again later. Yeah. So I love the fact that I'm experienced in it enough to know that I can look at a potential project and the people that I've met along the way give me the ability to call somebody up and say, hey, I'm looking at this opportunity. What's your thoughts on it? It may be their niche. It may be something they've tried. It's not necessarily about what I've done. It's about who I've met and who is in my wheel that I can tap on the shoulder and say, hey, what do you think about this project? And you know, it may be something for us to do together. It may be something for them to give me advice on, insight, steer me away from, you know. So learning from other people's experiences as well has been instrumental in evaluating some of the deals that I've looked at and some of the deals that I've done.
Well, and let's talk about this part of it, because if we're saying this is a potential niche for people, you've gone through this very process of learning some of the things like construction and architecture, and you had the property management thing figured out, but you've had to learn about zoning and entitlements and all that. Talk about how someone approaches that, and where are you able to learn these things?
Experience is one of the key factors that really kind of helped me along the way. But there's tons of opportunity for people to learn how to do this on their own. You can go to, you can take classes, you can watch videos, you know. I mean, I'm not saying watch a YouTube video and learn how to build a house. It's not necessarily a DIY opportunity, but it gives you a good feel for it. I mean, I talk to clients all the time that they watch the flipper shows, and so they know how to flip a house. Well, it doesn't always go that way. So, you know, learning from other people's experiences they're worth their weight in gold. Yeah. So trying different things, you know, partnering on deals, you know, you can partner on a build job, a single family home, you know, 2000 square feet, partner on that build job where you're not necessarily taking, you know, the lion's share of the risk. You're just bringing some capital to it, or you're bringing whatever your expertise may be, or just some opportunity to allow somebody else to kind of flourish and learn from them along the way. You know, that's how I learned multifamily investing, was investing with other sponsors that showed me the ropes. Yeah. And so I put some capital to work and learned along the way. That's been my favorite way to learn, is put some capital to work and learn what it's doing while it's making me money.
Yeah, it's a great, great idea. Very much in the same camp. That's one of my favorite things to do. You know, in my earlier career, I was a lot more hands-on. Today, my favorite thing is to hand the ball to someone who knows what they're doing, right? And really, that's the essence of most development. A lot of the development that gets done around the world is done through syndication, through these joint ventures. You know, you mentioned partnering. The obvious place when it comes to development is there's a lot of folks who own land and have no idea what to do with it. In fact, just this morning, you and I had a meeting, along with Russ, with a gentleman who owns a lot of land and isn't a real estate developer. He's got a great business. He's got a really interesting parcel. And his good friend says, hey, I know some guys in real estate. Why don't we sit down and have a cup of coffee? And we just talked through some different ideas. Who knows where that will lead? But the point is, there are folks out there that are good candidates to maybe partner with, either because they have that experience, or they own a piece of property, or they have some asset that your development project needs. So I think it's one of the greatest ways not only to learn, but to get stuff done. Many hands make the weight light, right? So,
sure.
And then of course, the raising the money part. I know you've been to our syndication event several times. Talk about that, sitting down across the table from somebody. You've never had a problem asking them for their property management business, but what's it like to ask them for a big check?
Man, that was scary at first. You know, looking back at it now, I was so scared to ask somebody for money. I didn't have the comfort level to be able to do it, and I didn't have the skills necessary to really kind of convince them that I was a good investment for them.
Yeah.
'Cause you're investing in the project, but you're also investing in the people that are responsible for the project.
Big time.
So I almost felt like a little kid. I was scared to ask for money. You know, you're asking for your parents for allowance and, you know, you're nervous about it. So I was really scared. And I didn't for a while. I tried to finance my own projects and doing things with debt and leverage. And that worked for a little while, but then you run out real quick. And you can't get to the economies of scale. Ironically, you guys put together, you know, some training programs, and it wasn't out more than a day or two, and I signed up and went to the class, and first one was syndication, and then that was an eye-opening experience for me, learning how to syndicate the good, the bad, the right way, the wrong way, and setting in that audience, you know, like a sponge, absorbing everything that was there to be had. And then Russ put together the sales training, and I went to that, and I've been in real estate all my life, and as long as I can remember, it's been a family business. So the training there, I didn't think I really needed it before I went to the class. And I went to the class, and I'm like, oh man, it wasn't that I was doing it wrong. It was that there was much better techniques to use. So it was enlightening. So that really kind of catapulted me, gave me a kick in the butt, and the tools and the ability, you know, really the confidence to be able to go out and talk to clients, talk to investors, and pitch.
Awesome. Well, it is like anything else. It seems awkward at first, and over time, you learn it. You learn it through bumping your head and making mistakes. You learn it through looking over the shoulders of folks that have come before you, whether it's real estate development or syndication or any of these things. It's doable. What you have to decide is it the right thing for you, right? For some folks, they shouldn't get anywhere near development, but if you're thinking it could be a possibility, I hope by listening to Jay's story, you realize that folks can do it. You can, if you just put your mind to it, get around the right people, dedicate yourself to learning, then before you know it, you're developing all kinds of stuff. So Jay, always great to have on the program, and thanks for your insight today.
Thanks. Appreciate you being here.
There's Jay Hartley from Dallas, Texas. More when we come back, we're talking about profitable niches. This week, real estate development. Is that for you? You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
This portion of the Real Estate Guys radio program is brought to you by International Coffee Farms, where you can own a parcel of land in your very own specialty coffee farm in Panama for as little as $15,000. Here's how it works. Deeded half-acre parcels entitled Specialty Coffee Farms in Boquete, Panama are turnkey managed professionally on your behalf by a team of local experts. Sustainable average income is estimated at 12%, and cash flow can begin within 12 to 15 months from the date of your parcel ownership. International Coffee Farms' mission is to own and operate specialty coffee farms that are economically, environmentally, and socially sustainable. As part of this mission, 20% of the gross profits of each farm is committed to a socially sustainable fund to improve the lives of the Panamanian coffee farm workers and their families. International Coffee Farms currently owns and operates 9 specialty coffee farms with half-acre parcels available for immediate ownership. To find out how you can become a coffee farm owner in Boquete, Panama, email coffee at realestateguysradio.com. That's coffee at realestateguysradio.com. Imagine listening in as two real-world apartment investing experts share their best ideas and strategies. Well, now you can. When you listen to the Old Capital Podcast featuring Michael Becker and Paul Peebles, you'll learn from two seasoned pros who funded and syndicated hundreds of millions of dollars in apartments. Each episode is chock full of expert advice, real-world wisdom, and interviews with real-life investors. For details about how you can listen to the Old Capital Podcast, send an email to OCP at realestateguysradio.com. When you do, we'll send you Michael Becker's personal due diligence checklist free of charge. Email your request to OCP, Old Capital Podcast, at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Mauricio Raul, the founder and CEO of Mir Law Group, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. Tell a friend about The Real Estate Guys because we need more listeners. Oh my gosh, always great to get around the amazing Jay Hartley.
Yeah, it is. And the thing that was really interesting, just listening to Jay kind of recount his evolution, and even though the show is about real estate development, I really felt like it was a show about personal development.
Sure.
It was about learning how to set a goal for yourself, learning how to push yourself to those resistance points, and learning how to use the environment you create. He talked about mentors. He talked about advisors. He talked a lot about team and the lessons going along the line. I mean, you can hear the humility, right? It's like, okay, I'm good at this, which I think it takes a degree of humility to admit I'm good at something.
Yep.
And then it takes another degree of humility to go, but I'm not good at these other things. And in order to get where I want to go, I need to improve in those areas. And the way I'm going to do that is not by locking myself in the closet and figuring it out, but by surrounding myself with people who are good and being vulnerable and being humble and asking questions and learning. And, you know, we've known Jay for a very, very long time. And I think the one thing that I've noticed in him is that he does have that ability to be ambitious and yet very coachable. He's been an easy guy to work with. Really have enjoyed the years seeing him grow. And then, of course, now, you know, to see the success he's having, it's fun to have played a small part in that.
Well, and, you know, the humility side, right? I don't know that he holds the record, but he's certainly been on Halloween Horror Stories more than once. And I think this year he'll be on another Halloween Horror Stories because he's not afraid to go out there and do something and then get the lesson. So many people in life, you make a mistake and you want to bury it,
yeah,
and not talk about it. where one of the first things he said is, well, there's been some pitfalls. Of course, that's anything in
life. That's where all the lessons are.
That's where you learn. So you've got to have that. But also, it is possible to reinvent yourself. You know, I mean, Jay could have gotten pigeonholed as a property manager. I mean, former, you know, he was the former president of the National Association of Residential Property Managers in Dallas. I mean, he's got that side of the business down. But recognizing the market shifts and changes, he had to shift and change. And that's part of what this whole idea of profitable niches is. Whatever it is that you're doing in real estate, if you're digging it, keep doing it. But there are maybe some other things for your consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about economic ebbs and flows and changing conditions. And, you know, the thing is, when external conditions change, coming back to this concept of personal development, then your internal has to change. You know, on the Summit at Sea, Robert Kiyosaki and Kim, they talked about be, do, have. And, you know, we talk about the idea, kind of the three-step process, how you think and what you believe affects what you do, and what you do affects the results you produce. And it's really the same. And a lot of times people fixate on what they want to have. These are my goals. I want to have this. I want to do this to have that. But really, in order to do consistently, congruently, you have to change who you are. You have to change how you think. You have to change what you believe you're capable of. And then when you make those shifts in your mind, you shift your behavior, you shift your results. And it's, you know, it seems so obvious when someone points it out. But the hardest thing that we have is, you know, wherever we're at in life, we've gotten through a lot of insecurities and all the stumbles and bumbles you have maturing as a human being. And sometimes people just get to a point where they're comfortable and they don't want to have to go through that again.
Sure.
And the concept of perpetual growth, like in bodybuilding, you know, if you really get serious, like to build muscle, to really build yourself up, it is constantly building up, tearing down, building up, tearing down, building up, tearing down. And if you're not willing, the old bodybuilding adage, you know, no pain, no gain. If you're not willing to push yourself past the point of pain, you're not going to gain. Now, you have to know the difference between damaging yourself and stimulating growth. Because, you know, you can confess failure, you can acknowledge your weaknesses to the point of incapacitating yourself. It's a fine line. And one of the things he said towards the end of the interview, which I thought was really outstanding, was that he came through all of that to a place of confidence.
Yeah.
And I remember him coming to that syndication course and you know, having an opportunity to go get his picture taken with Ken McElroy. And he didn't take it. Several people jumped up and he didn't take it. And I went and called him out on it a little bit. You know, I was like, dude, come on, you got a chance to get, you know, kind of a money shot with a big name in the space. Next time he did it.
Yep.
And that was great to see that. And I know what it's like in sales when you sit down and you have to start talking to people about money and you have to overcome all those insecurities and that sense of dread. And then when you really begin to see that what you have is something successful people value, which is the ability to put their money to work where they don't have to get their hands dirty, that is a big, big prize to offer the marketplace. But you can only recognize your value when you stop thinking about your need and you focus on the needs of the people you're serving. And that's a big shift to make. But that's a key to being successful in selling. And that's why now he's saying, where before it was like, I don't have money. Now he's got plenty of money. And the problem is I got to keep my labor force busy and I need deal flow. I got money. Now I need deal flow. And so, again, your problems change as you grow, but they're good problems to have. I mean, most people listening to this, I'm sure, would love to have a problem. Dang, I've got too much money available to me. That's a problem.
I think one of the big issues is that developers, for the most part, are always looking for investment capital. To get bigger, there are developers that just fund everything out of their own pocket. But there aren't too many of them. So if development sounds good to you, then arm in arm with that is probably learning the ability to raise capital. And we've got a couple of great ways to get your mind around that. How to Win Funds and Influence People is right around the corner. That's really about the capital raising part. And of course, the Secrets of Successful Syndication is coming up in September. All the details on the website at realestateguysradio.com. Hey, one of the things Jay does, besides obviously his great personal development story and real estate development story, is creates inventory in the Dallas marketplace. He also has lots of clients in property management, and of course, they often want to sell property. This has been a hard market to get into. Inventory is tight, but he's a guy who's on the inside track. So if you're interested at all in investment property in Dallas, just send a quick email to Dallas Deals at realestateguysradio.com, and automatically, like magic, all Jay's contact information will come back to you, so you can reach out to Jay and say, hey, help me find a house, help me find an investment project, help me find a syndication, whatever it is. Dallas Deals at realestateguysradio.com.
I would do a deal with Jay just to have the opportunity to be in a relationship with him. He's just a guy I like spending time with.
Absolutely. Well, big thanks to Jay Harley for sharing some of his wisdom with us today. Next week on the show, another profitable niche, and in a few weeks, another edition of Ask the Guys. So if we didn't get to your question last week on Ask the Guys, and you've got a burning question for the Real Estate Guys, go to realestateguysradio.com. Click the button that says Ask the Guys and ask your question, and who knows, maybe you'll be on the next Ask the Guys show. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.